Welcome to Media News. It is my great pleasure today to welcome on our programme Lloyd Russell Moyle MP, Chair of the UK All-Party Parliamentary Group, the APPG, on Kurdistan and Syria and Turkey, to talk about a 56-page report released this June by the All-Party Parliamentary Group. The report is entitled Kurdish Political Representation and Equality in Turkey. The report was researched and funded by the Office of Lloyd Russell Moyle MP and Unite the Union. Welcome, Mr. Russell Moyle MP, and firstly, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today to discuss the findings in the report. As the UK APPG report states, it has been recently published, and I quote, "At a time of acute crisis, a crisis of human rights and freedom of speech and a fundamental collapse of democracy, this report outlines the dire situation in Turkey regarding repression of political representatives, violence against women and girls, quashing of journalistic freedoms and militarised attacks targeting majority Kurdish regions. Despite intervals at which the Turkish state has attempted to expand the rights of the Kurdish population, the report extensively documents the way in which recent years under President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's ruling party have seen a return to repressive and violent targeting of Kurds. The treatment of the Kurdish population and of elected representatives, it concludes, is one of the greatest threats to democracy in Turkey and the wider region. As the repression of democratically elected representatives has increased in severity, the violence directed at Kurdish civil society has also become more pronounced." The report also importantly points out that the APPG finds that Kurdish women in Turkey face particular challenges, both in their professional political roles and in their personal lives, and notes that this is the backdrop of a hostile environment for women's rights in Turkey more generally. The APPG finds that women have been arrested for speaking up in support of the Istanbul Convention, a Council of Europe instrument to prevent and combat violence against women and girls. The report also noted that during the 2018 and 2019 visits that it made, it was clear that Turkey's infringements and annexation of parts of Syria was intrinsically linked to the treatment and perception of Kurds in Turkey itself. The report also very importantly and significantly recommends that the British government revisits the basis upon which it criminalises the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK. And I quote here from the report is what it states is so significant, and I think listeners might find it of use at the outset to really just hear the findings before we can discuss these matters further in the podcast. So I quote here from the report. Belgian Supreme Court case lawyer Jean Fermon successfully argued in a Supreme Court case in Belgium that the PKK should be internationally recognised not as a terrorist organisation but as a non-state group acting within an armed conflict. Fermon also contributed to the Permanent People's Tribunal, the PPT, in 2018, which concluded that the PKK should not be listed as a terrorist organisation, but that, and I quote, "there is no doubt that this organisation meets all the criteria that allow it to be considered as a political military organisation, which carries out an armed struggle against Turkish security services, army and authorities, towards the realisation of the right to determination of the Kurdish people," end quote by Jean Fermon. This ruling, the APPT report notes, was echoed in the Court of Cassation, Belgium Supreme Court, where they ruled that the PKK is a party active in a war against the Turkish government. In effect, the PKK does not meet the criteria to be listed internationally as a terrorist organisation. The report further adds, in the third oral evidence session of the inquiry, Fermon discussed the most recent cases in the Belgian Supreme Court and a parallel case in the European Court of Justice, Luxembourg. Both cases related to the criminalisation or the listing of the PKK. The Belgian prosecutions began when Belgian authorities concluded, after significant pressure from the Turkish government, that Kurdish media outlets and the Kurdistan National Congress, the KNK, were publishing propaganda and recruiting and financing the PKK. By 2014, although 42 individuals had been named as working for the PKK, insufficient evidence had been collected to conclude the allegations outlined previously. It was argued, similarly to the PPT case, that the PKK should be treated as a party in an armed conflict or civil war rather than a terrorist group. And as the APPG report confirms, this defence was accepted by the Belgian Court of Cassation in January 2020. The court concluded that the conflict in Turkey is significant enough to be classed as a civil war and that the PKK is a structured and organised military non-state party rather than a terrorist gang-like group. The APPG heard that if the PKK were treated as an equal party in an armed conflict rather than as a terrorist organisation, there would be more inclination for international governments and the parties involved to reach a peace agreement. Vermon argued in his submission that once the PKK are internationally recognised as a non-state party in a civil war, the path to peace would be more straightforward. Governments would be able to begin to find ways to solve the conflict rather than committing resources to fighting a terrorist organisation. So far, no European or international court has found that the PKK meets the requirements for a terrorist organisation or that the listing is legally applied. End quote. The APPG report also practically presented a number of recommendations to the UK government and parliamentary representatives in the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, PACE, and I'm only outlining a few of these here for our listeners' convenience. So I'm quoting directly from the report. The APPG urges the UK government to review the classification of the PKK as a terrorist organisation based on contemporary evidence, recent legal cases in both Belgium and the European courts, and to outline its findings. The APPG notes that the accusation of the Republican People's Party, the CHP, that is the official opposition MPs, of links to terrorism when they have spoken in support of Kurds, highlights the absurdity of the accusations of terrorism for elected officials. The APPG urges the UK government to make clear that the application of the label of terrorism cannot be applied to a broad range of Kurdish political and cultural organisations just because they are Kurdish or support Kurdish self-autonomy. The APPG urges the UK government to consider the reliability of the Turkish government's rhetoric in People's Democratic Party, HDP prosecutions, and in regard to the PKK itself. The APPG recommends that the UK government unreservedly diverge from Turkey on its definition of the People's Protection Units, the PYD, and the Democratic Union Party, the YPG, as terrorist organisations, in line with its current practice to not list them and to work with them on the ground. The current trajectory of Turkish state oppression of Kurdish communities can only lead to further human rights abuses and violence. The UK must support Kurdish political and cultural organisations and put pressure on the Turkish government to take action for lasting peace. And I just end the quote there. And of course, I'm also aware that the report was sent to the Department of Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Affairs, and that you have stated that you are seeking a full debate in Parliament this month regarding the recommendations the APPG presented. I also note that in your Twitter account, Lloyd Russell Moyle, highlighting the findings of the APPG report, that you stated that the Turkish state has used the PKK listing as a terrorist organisation to target innocent journalists, activists and politicians. So regarding the topics for discussion today, and really thank you so much for being present and agreeing to appear on this podcast. In light of the above, could you please elaborate upon the main findings and recommendations of the report, as only some of them have been highlighted here, and also whether you think that the Turkish government's and armed forces' actions since the report was released have in any way altered or reinforced the basis of the assessments that were made in that report? And do you and or the APPG consider any of the actions of the Turkish state in the areas you've made an assessment to constitute war crimes and or crimes against humanity and or genocidal crimes, however defined, be they in terms of the Genocide Convention or in terms of other definitions? And finally, does the report call upon the British government to politically recognise the Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria, that's ANIS, also known as Rojava, the autonomous region in North and Eastern Syria? Might he be discussing this issue of recognition in the forthcoming UK parliamentary debate? The Rojava Information Centre, for instance, describes the autonomous area under ANIS as a unique political project, building the foundations of a multi-ethnic democratic society based on gender equality, ecological regeneration and locally devolved power. Many people, including those living in Rojava, as well as peace activists, and the US Commission on International Religious Freedom and its chair, Nadine Maenza, see political recognition of Arnis as critical in creating stability in the wider region for the various peoples of different ethnicities and peoples with different or of no faith who are living in the region. As Elif Kaya at Yeni Ozger Politica and as also translated and published in many Media News has also argued, echoing the views of many, 9 years after the Rojava Revolution, Arnis has no status that is recognised internationally. Such a state of no status abolishes all access to international mechanisms which would hold accountable the perpetrators of war crimes in north and east Syria. It also makes the revolution vulnerable to all sorts of attacks. An important way to protect the revolution and the peoples of different ethnicities and religious faiths, alongside those who hold no faith that it protects collectively, is to make sure that its international status is recognised. So thank you so much once again, Lloyd Russell Moyle, MP, for joining us on this programme. And we look forward to hearing your views and perspectives on all the above concerns. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And it's lovely to be with you today. Let me first of all start with Rojava, because it is a place that I visited a number of times and is close to my heart now. There was a very interesting dramatisation on Radio 4, actually, about some of those issues only on the weekend. But the report didn't touch primarily, apart from when we were talking about the PKK listing, because that was around that border terrorism listing. It doesn't touch on issues around northeastern Syria. The APPG did write some brief reports after our two trips in previous years, 2018 and 19, and those have called for a number of things, including better support for Rojava, ensuring that the Northeastern Syrian Autonomous Authority representatives are in the negotiations, and that the area is secured so that it does not just fall foul to the forces either of Turkey in the north or some of the resurgent Syrian forces to the south, and that actually that must form a long-term settlement for Syria as an autonomous region of a federated Syria. So we talked about that in those previous reports. At the beginning of this report, it kind of says we recognise all these things and the interlocking nature of these issues. You know, a lot of the particular repression in some of the regions that Turkey takes part in is under the cover of some of the fights in Syria. So they are interlinked, but we don't actually make recommendations further about that, although, as you can probably tell, I'm very sympathetic. On to the main substance of this report is our view that there are some particular problems around these issues of how Turkey is treating political representation, treating cultural representation, and then particularly women and journalists of Kurdish background or Kurdish support. And we went about that partly because some of our colleagues in the 2016 parliamentary year had visited, of course, parts of Turkey to see some of the trials which were taking place at the time. They were trumped up trials. The judge, for example, ordered that the MPs that were in that delegation should go and visit. They should be able to be let in the court. And of course, the military barred them from even entering against the judge's order. So our feeling was that things were getting bad in Turkey and we needed to look at it in more depth, holistically. That's what this report aims to do. It aims to look at the wider issue of political representation of Kurdish people. Now, of course, out of politeness and courtesy, the first thing I did was to write to the ambassador of Turkey to say, we're going to look into this. Is there things that you would like to improve? And I must say, it was very unfortunate that we got a letter back that was very dismissive of this issue. You know, we do not recognise Kurds, we do not recognise ethnic minorities as having a status in Turkey. The only ethnic minority we recognize is because of the treaties with Greece and some of the Christians. Now, we all know that if you don't recognize groups of people, then that is the first step to being able to oppress them and not allow them self-autonomy and expression. And so that immediately set alarm bells running. Now, we also mentioned in the report, of course, that it is recently that Joe Biden, president of the USA, has talked of the Armenian genocide for the very first time. Yes. And so it is also a moment, I think, for us to start re-looking at Turkish history and re-looking at the current actions of Turkey to see where in the past maybe Western countries have been too afraid to point out these genocides and massacres, and they are now more willing to be critical. Does that mean the current situation is a genocide, is a violation of international humanitarian law? Well, look, I am not a court to make that judgment. We are not a court to make that judgment. But what we do say is that these things need to be investigated, that the British government needs to ask some serious questions about particularly some of the curfews, for example, some of the other restrictions that Turkey is putting on, particularly in ethnically dominated areas of the Kurds. And if they are not able to provide suitable answers, then we should look at whether these are then triggering those thresholds. But the first step is that we must be asking very serious questions and breaking that link where the British government accepts everything that the Turkish government says. I mean, one of the examples around the terrorism of an HDP officials, one of the HDP colleagues gave evidence that he was facing trial for forming the PKK. Well, the PKK was set up when he was 5 years old. So this idea that he could have been involved in founding of the PKK, and of course, in the later part, we talk about how the PKK should be reassessed anyway. But even if you considered the PKK a terrorist organization, to try and prosecute people who were 5 years old when it was founding it for founding the organization is totally and clearly an abuse of power and abuse of due process. And
that's totally absurd, isn't it? So yeah, it's a really crazy story.
And Turkey is meant to be, I mean, my view always is that you have a stronger duty to criticize your allies than your enemies. You know, kind of, if this is a crude analogy, but if you are walking down a street and someone across the road catcalls a woman, well, maybe you have a duty to kind of say to that woman, God, I'm really sorry about that idiot over there. But you don't have a duty necessarily to tackle them to the ground. If one of your friends catcalls a woman in the street, you have a duty to say to your friend, that was out of order. I can't continue to be your friend if you do those awful misogynist kinds of things. Now, I know that that is just an analogy, but scaling that up, in my view, there is something similar here with Britain's role with Turkey. Turkey is meant to be a Council of Europe member, abiding by certain human rights standards. Turkey is meant to be a NATO ally, abiding by certain democratic and Western liberal standards. And it, when it fails to do that, and our report identifies a number of areas, the restrictions on cultural expression, the restrictions on democratic elected mayors, the restrictions on journalists, arresting them, making collective punishment, it seems to happen in a number of areas around curfews, etc. Those things seem particularly problematic, and we need to be questioning that. Now, since this report has been published, the situation in Turkey has got no better. In fact, it has got worse. I mean, I know locally in my constituency, we have a former member of the HDP Youth Committee that has had to seek refugee status in my constituency because, of course, the Turkish oppression. He was tortured, in fact, of people who hold views that the more authoritarian Turkish government now does not support are being clamped down on in more aggressive and violent ways. And so it is even more concerning now than it was maybe even 6 months ago. And I know that's something that we will bring up in the debate. I said to the minister when we had our last debate in Westminster Hall about the situation of the HDP that I would bring this report to them and I will now do so. Now, how Parliament works, unfortunately, is I have to put in the ballot for that. And it might be a number of months before that ballot is drawn. It is a lottery. But I will be persistent and we will get a debate one way or another.
Thank you for that clarification. With regard to the PKK issue, the request to consider decriminalisation, again, could you just perspectives on that, the report's perspectives?
Well, what we've asked there with the PKK issue is for the government to review and to provide evidence of why and how it has listed the PKK as a terrorist organisation. It might well be that certain activities one wishes to identify that are not desirable, but there are two problems. One is the expansive definition of anyone that seems to have any Kurdish supporting views is accused of being a PKK sympathiser. And that clearly is ridiculous and needs to be much more clearly laid out in the listing if PKK is to continue to be listed, that that is excluded. So that needs to be addressed. The second part is the interesting court cases that we're now seeing from around the world, including the Luxembourg Court of the European Court of Justice and the Belgium Court, which both have now effectively said that the PKK does not meet those standards of a terrorist organisation. It's an internal conflict. Now, it is not unusual for us to, at a certain point in time, when we show that organisations that were terrorist in nature, but have tried to move towards a political resolution, are delisted and are brought into the fold. So rather than engaging in histrionics of the past, looking even forward, what we can say is the PKK has been very positive in that engagement. And just like the FARC in Colombia, of which I visited earlier last year, were delisted, and there is a peace process ongoing there, a flawed peace process, but a peace process, or in Ireland where there was a peace process, we also have a duty to start to identify how the PKK has moved away from maybe a past that some people could complain about. So on two fronts, they could be reconsidered. One is the fact that the other courts have said that they are in internal conflict and it is not a terrorist organisation. And the second is the efforts that Kurdish leaders have made themselves towards negotiation and peace for an autonomous region within Turkey rather than separation. And those things are both things that the government must consider. And in other examples, as I said, with, say, for example, the FARC in Colombia, they have reconsidered them and delisted them. And so it's now time for us to do the same with the PKK.
Yes, and I think, as you say, in these types of peace processes as well, criminalisation would also result in less targeting and criminalisation of the Kurdish community in the UK. And as I'm sure you're aware, if one were even talking about, let's say, conflict resolution initiatives, that becomes problematic with the way in which, as you say, there can be almost a catch-all way in which people might be interpreted as supporting the PKK, you know, through glorification or whatever, when in fact all these key people are involved is in trying to actually arrive at the resolution of the issue, as you say.
I have probably had my photo taken with a PKK flag in the background, you know, kind of, does that mean that I'm a terrorist? No, I believe in a peaceful solution here. So that absurdity must be got rid of in the law, and that must be clarified. And the easiest way of doing that is delisting. Delisting doesn't mean that people can then do all crimes that they want to. In fact, if you list as a non-state actor of a conflict, you then can be still got for war crimes, you can still be got for other crimes, and it might well be the case that there are certain people in the PKK that are then liable for those things if they take part in violent activities. And that is still a serious and heinous crime, and in fact comes with sometimes even higher punishments if you are complicit in supporting activities of war crimes and genocide. So it does, it's for anyone that thinks it's a kind of get out of free jail card, it's not. What it is a sensible reflection of the situation on the ground to allow us to move towards peace and address actions that are problematic and not address a view an ideology, which is clearly not problematic, which is the view that people should have autonomy over their lives and what country they are ruled by, and a democratic process to express their views.
Well, thank you very much for that. I was also just trying to work out, does the All-Party Parliamentary Group have a plan to present a report with reference to the situation in Syria at all, or is that...
Well, as I said, we visited Syria 2018-2019, and we did produce short statements of our visit at the time. Yes. If we manage to get back and visit again, which we would love to do, but coronavirus has delayed, then I'm sure that a new report at that point would be forthcoming. But there's no plan at the moment to do a report without a visit.
No, that's fine. And with regard to, as you know, there are ongoing trials taking place in Turkey targeting the HDP. Would you all be closely following all those issues? And obviously, the other issue which we've not fully detailed is obviously Turkey pulling out of the Istanbul Convention. Are there any obviously key concerns which I'm sure you hope to?
We are deeply worried about the pulling out of the Istanbul Convention. I mean, that is part of the, I use this word reluctantly, but the kind of insistence of kind of Islamification of the state, in which it is becoming more authoritarian, but also more religiously driven, of a particular view of religion that Erdogan and his allies in the MHP push. And so that is more broadly problematic for Turkey compared to a more secular pluralistic structure that the Kurds have generally developed and pushed for. So that does look very worrying. I know that a number of our committees here in Parliament are more broadly worried about the withdrawal of the Istanbul Convention and something that they are working on. And I think that targeting, particularly of women, and the Kurds have taken a strong role in promoting women and gender equality, is something that they and us will continue to monitor. I mean, as I said, some of this work started in 2016 when MPs visited some of the trials of HDP, which are expanding and are ongoing. And we will continue to follow some of those things. And at our last meeting, we talked particularly around how we wanted to develop a solidarity link via maybe the Congress or the Parliamentary Assembly in the Council of Europe, and the IPU, which represents parliamentarians. And that's something that my colleague, Alex Sobel, for example, who sits on the British International Parliamentarian Union Committee, will raise through his channels.
Oh, thank you. And in another way, I mean, obviously you're aware that Turkey is also currently engaged in major military cross-border operations in Iraqi Kurdistan, or South Kurdistan. Are there any ways in which your analyses perhaps link up with other APPG groups focusing on Iraqi Kurdistan itself? Or
yes. I mean, well, there is a different APPG for Iraqi Kurdistan South Kurdistan. That is got slightly different views from our group. And that has been very much supporting the KRG and the work that they are doing. And the difficulty with the Kurdish infringements is about that nature of cooperation between the different actors there. I'm very worried about some of those infringements. I think it starts to infringe on sovereignty as well of Iraq. So there are some real problems with that. But it is more complicated for us to address here in Parliament because there is some slightly more conflicting views, even within MPs that support Kurds more broadly.
No, I appreciate that. Well, really, it was just to say thank you very much. Obviously, you're following the trials in Turkey and various other places. The report also generally talked about the issues of wider peace in the region, holding Turkey to account within itself and in terms of the rule of law. I don't know if you're able to just elaborate on a few of the points raised in the APPG report on that, because obviously what's happening in Turkey, what's happening with regard to Turkey's interventions in Syria, a wider impact in the wider region. Just mercenary groups and sponsored groups, and you're probably aware there's some documentation of a lot of the trade, for instance, being whisked away in terms of the olive trade and other people and other human rights issues being subsumed into Turkish law. I wonder if that was something you looked at, or again, whether that's something for further evaluation.
Well, this is something of concern. I mean, there are two elements to this. One is the wider role that Turkey and the Kurds play in the region. And if we are not able to protect and support a more democratic, open, secular movement, which is what I think democratic confederalism aims to be, then it is a bad signal for the whole region about whether those views can prosper side by side. So there's an important role there. There's also an important role that Turkey has traditionally been seen as one of the few democracies in the region. And that is coming more and more in doubt as well. And so that would be a great, important and strategic loss if what we fear, the Ottomanization of Turkey by Emperor Erdogan, is continued. So I think those things that we are deeply worried about. But there is also what you talk about there, is the more detailed destabilization, the accusations that Turkey is glove in hand with a load of jihadis that they put on the border basically as a buffer zone, and help do some of their fighting for them in proxy against the autonomous region in northeastern Syria. That is also a great worry as well. And they were held at bay when American and British and French troops were there, or they were supporting things like a no-fly zone. Now that has been rolled back, there is a particular ongoing threat there that Turkey continues to push forward beyond the lines it's already unilaterally set, which is further into Syria. And the danger also of that is that if Turkey starts to infringe too much in Syria, it encourages other actors, whether it's the Syrians or the Russians, to try and push Turkey back, and you end up having a war there on a borderline where the population, majority Kurd, but not always in every village, is actually just piggy in the middle for a geopolitical battle of where a borderline should be. And that is also extremely dangerous and could escalate very quickly.
Well, thank you very much for that. And just a final point. I know, obviously, Britain part of NATO, Turkey being part of NATO. You'd be also requesting the British government to try and push for the debate for the reconsideration of the PKK as a non-terrorist entity within the context of NATO, because obviously that plays a major role in the wider issue of criminalisation of the PKK, and obviously assist in frustrating the types of peace initiatives we're talking about, conflict resolution initiatives.
Quite. Well, I mean, I think, first of all, the first task is to review the situation in Britain. And if we get the result that we need, then it's a case of seeing where we can then advocate for that elsewhere. One step at a time. Let's walk before we can run.
I appreciate. Well, once again, thank you so much. The podcast obviously was really to try and highlight a lot of these key points to our listeners. Thank you so much for fleshing out a lot of these wider issues. Thank you very much for contributing to the podcast program, and I hope we're able to perhaps interview in a few months' time. I take it you've not heard from the Foreign Office at all about the report?
Not yet, but today is the first day back, so and they, to be fair, and they have been rather busy with Afghanistan.
I appreciate that. Well, okay. Thank you so much once again, and really thank you for appearing on the program and answering.
My pleasure. Thank you.